Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Student Body Right, the complete college football podcast. I'm your host, Nick Blinchak, and I am excited today to talk about one of my favorite things that there is, period. What is it you say? It's daily fantasy college football. We had a two-year gap where we just couldn't play, and it was awful, and my Saturdays were a little less complete. Then last year, as predicted by yours truly, with the gambling landscape changing, I felt like it was probably going to be reintroduced, and it was. If only I could have enough foresight like that with my fantasy lineups, but I kid. I had a really good year last year. I really think that this year should be even better. Once again, you are listening to the Student Body Right podcast. You can find us online at studentbodyright.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Student Body Right. And you can find me on Twitter at Nick from CWE. So let's talk a little bit about how exactly you want to play college football daily fantasy. And I think the first thing that is worth mentioning is that there is a huge edge if you really, really, really pay attention to the news. It's hard to get, but for the most part, beat reporters who aren't absolute dickheads, and there's a lot of them. Let me rant on beat reporters for a minute. I remember a couple of years ago, I want to say it was Mark and Michelle, maybe for the University of Massachusetts, was questionable. And daily fantasy players were tweeting at the beat that morning, asking about his health. And this dude threw like a half-grown-up hissy fit about daily fantasy players hitting up his Twitter. First of all, beat reporters, beat writers, whatever you want to call them, large contingency of your followers absolutely are fantasy players. Fantasy is huge. Daily fantasy is huge. Why wouldn't you embrace it? I know that there was recently something else, maybe in baseball or something like that. Could have been basketball near the end of the season where, yeah, it was with the Toronto Raptors beat reporter who's just like straight out ignorant to daily fantasy players. I just don't understand that. There's no reason for the hate. Like, there are people who make a living off of doing this, just like, if you really sit and think about it, this is a game of skill. It takes a lot of thought. It takes a lot of analysis. It takes a lot of perseverance and going through bouts of, you know, losses. And it takes a lot to really, you know, get your game into a position where you can be a long-term profitable player. I've been playing for like 7 years and I'm just getting to that point. For somebody who literally writes about a sports team, to undermine that is absolutely asinine. I'm not trying to diminish writing as a professional job, because we need people in journalism. We need people to keep us entertained. We need people to feed us the news. But let's not pretend that we're a lesser species because we're hitting up the beat reporter to try to find out if somebody's going to play. No, we know that there's no formulaic injury report that has to be issued for college football, so we're trying to find any possible edge that we can. A lot of times you'll know that a guy is not playing, but you won't know who's necessarily going to step in. Last year, a great example was both Tyron Johnson and Dylan Stoner were going to be out for Oklahoma State. Obviously, Oklahoma State is a high-powered offense. We all know that Tylan Wallace is the number one unquestioned. He's going to be slated to have a big day, but it's very often that if it's going to be a high-scoring game, we were seeing two of those guys pop off. And I dug for like 3 days trying to figure out who is it going to be. And, you know, at the end of the day, I found an article that was written completely innocently talking about Landon Wolf. And it wasn't even necessarily like this kid's going to play, but they were just talking about what he brings to the table and how much he's improved. And just looking at the depth chart, to me, I just said it makes sense that this is going to be the kid. So I didn't even hesitate. 3K dropped him in my cash game lineup, because at the very least, even if he just doesn't do anything, you just open up your cash game lineup to a huge extent. Well, he did more than that, and he had like 6 for 78 and a touchdown. And, you know, he really came through. He might have even gone over 100 yards. I don't look, but, you know, so you have to really pay attention to a lot of the news because it's going to dictate. Now, the other side of that is if a guy is questionable and you can't find anything on him, you don't need to force him into your cash game lineup specifically. Like, there are going to be guys that are in great matchups and you want to play them, and maybe the price is right, or you're just thinking, man, if this guy plays, I know that he's going to absolutely crush and he's going to finish with 10 catches for 180 yards and 3 touchdowns. But you don't take those risks in your cash game. And I notice a lot of people in daily fantasy college football seem to do that. They seem to really be willing to take far more unnecessary risks within their lineup construction than I see in a lot of other sports. So with injuries, find beat reporters. Do not hesitate to tweet them. I do it all the time for the CFL, for the NBA. I really haven't gotten a response back, but just give the guy a follow. Thank him if he, you know, gives you something that helps you. At the end of the day, we all like feeling like what we're providing is valuable. So that's my biggest thing, is injuries are definitely a crucial part and can be a tremendous edge in college football. Another potential huge edge for me, and it's probably, you know, more heavily slated toward tournaments, but people tend to just gravitate toward matchups, right? People tend to look at OMG, you know, Daryl Henderson is playing Texas Tech. He's a smash, no questions asked, going to have 314 yards and 5 touchdowns. And Jonathan Taylor, against a little bit of tougher competition, goes way under-owned. Well, there's a lot of leverage there and maybe just hitting the field on Daryl Henderson. I understand this is college football and now he's in the NFL, but I'm just using it as an example. That's not to say maybe you still go overweight on Henderson, but maybe you go overweight on Taylor too. Maybe you try to toy, if you can find some decent value at wide receiver, maybe there's a situation where two guys end up having these rock star days and you're going to need to have them both together. So I think negative matchups tend to get a little bit more overrated. While positive matchups obviously always get a lot more of the ownership. And a good example of something like that could be week 1, where you see Alabama against Duke, you see a huge spread, you see Tua priced up as the highest projected quarterback or highest priced quarterback on the slate. But in that specific situation, yeah, Tua's probably going to throw for 3.5 touchdowns, 4 touchdowns. I know, you know, you wonder how he could throw for half a touchdown, but that's just what he will be projected for, right? When you build a projection system, you're dealing with a lot of decimal points. But even if he throws for that, he might only throw for 220 yards. And while that might be a terrific NFL day and you're excited that this guy, you know, did what he did, there's going to be so many more games. A guy like Matt Corral, who's significantly cheaper, could end up throwing for 340 yards, 4 touchdowns, 50 yards on the ground, and 2 sneaks and have 45 or 50 fantasy points, because he's more likely to be in the game all of the time. Whereas, like I said on one of the first podcasts we did, I know we've only had 2, so they're all one of the first, but you look at a guy like Tua, you look at a guy like Travis Etienne or Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, running back and quarterback specifically, there's some cannibalistic nature of those positions when a team is heavily favored and could be sitting down by the middle of the third quarter or sooner. So that's something you really have to take into consideration. Like, it makes sense that you want to toss Tua out there. It's a good matchup. But it's not as good of a matchup as if he's playing Texas A&M and they're still expected to score a lot of points, but the spread's going to be closer. And maybe it's in College Station, and maybe A&M keeps it a little bit closer, and Alabama's defense isn't doing as much, and Tua does have to play four full quarters where you do see the opportunity for a stealing game. But it's just not necessarily going to be in week one. So that's an edge that you can almost certainly have. Week one, pricing is always going to be softer. It takes 3 to 4 weeks, really, in every sport. No matter what sport you're looking at, it usually takes 3 or 4 weeks for pricing to become really fully stabilized. So for me, I mean, I'm kind of tipping my hand, but it doesn't matter. I'm not influencing that many people to play daily fantasy college football. But at the end of the day, I would like to shoot for upside. Really, when I build both my cash game and my tournament lineups, I'm not just looking to plug in someone who's safe. Tua is going to be extremely safe, going to be a very safe option. I don't see a situation where he doesn't get you 27 to 32 fantasy points. But the problem with that is that's probably his ceiling in this situation. So do you want to put yourself behind the curve where you're spending most of your money at the quarterback position? You're leaving one of the top-tier running backs on the table. You're leaving one of the top-tier wide receivers on the table because you wanted to get safety at the quarterback position where, I hate to say it, but you're going to find guys, especially early on in the season, and plus matchups where they're underpriced. And yes, Matt Corral is a guy that is a perfect example of that. So that's definitely a technique that I'm going to be using heavily as we move forward. I think, like I said, that's a really good example. You know, the other side of that argument is I'm fine with using someone like a Jerry Jeudy in that situation, or probably Justin Ross or T. Higgins are better examples, because whereas Judy's going to be the highest priced receiver on the slate, and I'm 99% sure that he is. I'm not going to check right now because I want to keep this thing going quickly and smoothly, but I certainly believe he is the highest priced receiver. So there is more risk with him, but you figure if Tua throws for 220 yards, Jeudy could very easily end up, and we know Jeudy is his favorite target, right? Like, nothing's changing this year. Yes, Waddle is dynamic, but at the end of the day, Jeudy is his guy. Defenses aren't going to be able to put the pressure on him like you think. We're going to double and triple team him. He's going to get his. If Tua happens to connect with 270-yard touchdown passes to him and or 250 yards and he ends up with five more catches for another 50 yards, this guy is sitting at 7 for 170 and two touchdowns, and he's made his nut. That's it. End of story. So you see how it's a little bit easier in those situations, whereas ETN, if you're only expecting him to play 2.5 quarters, and you think during that time Clemson's going to score 4 touchdowns, I'm not going to really think it's highly likely that he's going to be involved in 2 or 3. I think it's more likely that he's involved in 1. Trevor Lawrence is involved in 3 of them. And for both players, they're not going to be able to meet their ceilings. You know ETN's going to be one of the highest priced running backs whenever that slate releases. So, you know, that's something you want to consider. I think that there's a far better argument to play running backs, to play wide receivers, than there is to play running backs and quarterbacks when they're in matchups like this. Another thing I like to look at when I am playing college football is simply Vegas odds. And I use it a little bit differently, right? It's not just necessarily looking at, you know, okay, here's what everybody does. Everybody goes and they look for the highest total. Oh my God, this team is, you know, this is a 74-point game. Again, we'll just keep going back to week one. Ole Miss and Memphis, it's like a 74-point total with a 6-point spread or something like that. Everyone's going to gravitate to that game potentially. I can't say for sure they will, but I think everyone will gravitate to that game, and it's expected to score the most points. It's expected to stay close. But I think oftentimes what people don't necessarily look at is the fact that you can get some luck or some equity by finding games that might be a little bit lower scoring and hoping that it stays competitive. Think last year, there's two games that come to mind, and I could be biffing on the first one, but I believe it was Northwestern and Stanford, or it was at least two of those teams that have a reputation for being like roughneck, low scoring total games on the defensive side of the ball. So it came in with a really, really, really low total, but it was just a slugfest, and they were churning yards down the field, scoring. And so the game ended up going like 20 points over the total with no ownership, because all of these people who are entering daily fantasy lineups get that sticker shock of, oh my God, this other game has such a high total. And yes, that's great, but you could run into a situation for some of these teams. Alabama could be a great example last year, where two of them, you know, might have four touchdowns, and he might have gone one to Waddle, one to Irv Smith, one to Devonta Smith, and one to Jalen Waddle. And you're sitting here like, shoot, none of these receivers really made bank. And if it did, it was probably Waddle, who was almost free and 1.5% owned. So he was really a non-factor in how the game actually played out, how the daily fantasy part of the game actually played out. And then the guy who went with somewhat of a stack of LSU and Texas A&M, who were all priced down because it was two defenses going against each other, but it was a tight spread, and it went to seven overtimes. And you can't bank. That's where that luck word comes into play. It was some. There was a great deal of luck that it ended up going into seven overtimes, but the people who are willing to take a chance on some of those players, seeing that it was a close spread in a divisional game, in a conference game, it paid off for them. Because they got almost double the amount of playing time that we got. Not actual time-wise, but quarter-wise. And that stuff can add up, no question about it. So that's something I certainly want to pay attention to. Changes on the depth chart, that's a big thing you have to try to pay attention to. If someone is starting to see a little more work, then oftentimes, again, it takes a little while for that pricing to really catch up to what their new value to the team is. So you get a couple of weeks where you are able to, benefit there. In terms of my general contest selection, I play both sides of the coin. I am a cash game player and I am a tournament player. When I build my cash games, I'll typically go with my favorite quarterback wide receiver combination, and I'll kind of fill in the blanks around that. Week one, different animal, because I do think it's highly likely that you can play one of the cheaper quarterbacks with one of their receiving options, and still be able to stack your lineup elsewhere. But last year, a lot of the time, it was me building, you know, Kyler Murray, Marquise Brown lineups, or Sam Ellinger, Lil Jordan Humphrey lineups, things of that nature, Dwayne Haskins and Paris Campbell. So I oftentimes would have to search for a little more value where you're getting, you know, guys who you know have a workload. And again, going back, one of my favorite things was last year playing Rakeem Boyd like 4K against Alabama. And yeah, obviously Alabama is a really good defense, but they had no other running backs. So he just kept getting the ball and he put together a solid game. Trey Ragus also had a really big game against Alabama. Just because Alabama blows another team out doesn't mean that other team's bringing in their second unit. So that puts a guy like Aaron Young, week one from Duke, firmly on my radar, because he could very easily finish with 10 for 120 yards and a touchdown or two. Duke's probably going to score some points. They sure might come near the end of the game, but as Alabama is starting to cycle some of their reserves onto the field, Duke's not going to roll over and say, well, it's done, let's move on to the next one. they want to get their offense. This is a quarterback who did start some games last year, but ultimately doesn't have the full spectrum of college football experience. They want to get him time. So you can look for situations like that. Look for guys returning from injury. Danny Davis and Cody White last year were cheap plays for a few weeks that just kept producing, and they never really got priced up. Tony Pollard, my God, he was the ultimate example of this, where these sites were just constantly like 4K, 3.8K, 4.4K, and it was just like Tony Pollard smash. That's what enables you to do those big stacks once pricing levels out, and once you start to see some of the top-tier quarterbacks come close to that 10K mark on DraftKings, and the receivers start to approach that 10K mark on DraftKings as things start to settle in. You know, having a guy like that opens up the salary cap, and usually you can find two or three a week. One of them's probably going to bust, but if you have a full chalk week, you can have a really great cash game situation because you were willing to, you know, play a correlated lineup and you put the value in around it. Tournament teams, it's always, you know, I'm always trying to push for a couple of punts, because in a lot of situations, some players just have higher ceilings. Darrell Henderson last year, I mean, he was a guy who, you know, should have been priced the amount of two 8K players, because he would return 52 fantasy points in some games, rushing for 200 plus, 300 plus yards and five touchdowns. I believe that's what he hit against UCF in the AAC championship game. So there's definitely opportunity there. It sounds like I'm saying it's the same strategy, but a lot of times, like, you know, another polar opposite example for my cash games, I liked a lot of the high-end running backs the week that Indiana was playing Ohio State. So I went with Peyton Ramsey and Nick Westbrook. And that combination was like 8K total. It was something really stupid. Maybe it was 10K total. And I walked away with like 40-plus fantasy points from it, and it allowed me to stack my lineup everywhere else with your Jonathan Taylors and Marquise Browns and ETNs of the world. So it's not always going to be a situation where, you know, I do try to go a little more balanced in my cash game builds. I really do. It's sounding like I'm saying something different, but I really do. Like, I'm playing safer, cheap options. In tournaments, that's where I will dig a little bit deeper and maybe try to isolate a situation where someone's getting an extended run, but it's in a bad situation, but they're likely to see the entirety of the game. So even if it does get out of hand or if the team is struggling, they're likely to see a high level of attempts. Like I said, Rakeem Boyd against Alabama, Trey Ragus against Alabama, those types of situations. Ultimately, you're looking for more. You do want more touchdown upside, but some of these players just have such a high floor in terms of their reception total, the amount of times they're touching the ball. Like, you look through some of Eno Benjamin, J.J. Taylor's. I just happen to be looking at J.J. Taylor. There's a number of times he touched the ball 27, 37 times a game. You don't get that in the NFL. Eno Benjamin, you know, Arizona State was fine with just handing the ball off to him and moving on to the next one. I don't see things like that changing into 2019. So because of those, like, touches, that's another thing we're trying to look at. We're trying to see where the touches are coming at, who's catching the football. Those are a lot easier to identify in cash games, and that's where you're really trying to go. Touchdowns are great when they happen, but at the end of the day, I want my production not to be based on something like touchdowns, because it's more highly erratic. Touchdowns is what I'm after in tournaments. I'm looking for a guy like James Prochet that's in a tough matchup, but you know SMU is going to throw him the ball. So if things click the right way, you're looking at a 12 reception, 120, two touchdown game, likely priced a little bit down than one he would have been, because they do kind of figure matchups in to some extent, and you're going to get him at a tenth of the ownership you would have got him at in a positive situation, because no one's trying to play him against a defensive powerhouse. So a lot of things go into considerations. They really do. For me, I've really stopped worrying about defenses a lot in all sports. I've really found that that makes a positive overall impact on my lineups, because crazy things happen all the time. A team is very unlikely to score 0 points. They're very unlikely to accumulate no yardage. So, you know, that's something that you have to try to find anything you could do to take an angle on the competition. The last thing I'll kind of leave everyone with, and look, what I would love you to do more than anything else, is if you have questions that you don't think I covered in here, reach out to me on Twitter at Nick from CWE or at Student Body Right. Send me a tweet and say, hey, I don't think you really mentioned this, but how do you handle this? Or how do you weigh this? Or can you explain your process on, you know, head to heads over double ups? Or is there anything you do different there? I'd love to answer them. I'm fine with that coming back to the next show that I record saying, look, we had some questions before. I'm going to lay it out for you. Here's how I would handle that. I think that's great. Give you what you want, give you a little more information. I'm super excited because there's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to lay down a solid episode. I'm debating whether I want to do it Thursday or Friday. I really don't know. I think I'm probably going to record it Thursday night, release it Thursday night to have out for Friday for week zero. This is going to be a week 100%. I'm going to give every ounce of information I have. Moving forward, I will probably give out a little more fractured information just because there's going to be way more games. But yeah, if there's anything else that comes to mind that you want to hear about, the last thing I'll say is trust your research. And again, a lot of what I'm saying might not necessarily just be college football related. You know, don't just play people from your favorite teams. That's not the advice. This is just a little extra piece. Just don't play people. I see so many people who create lineups and like, I'm a Northwestern guy, so I play at least two of their guys every week. Why? You supporting them is irrelevant to making money. And in many cases with Northwestern, you're just going to lose money. And that leads me to this point. Stick to your guns. I can't tell you how many times in the 7 years that I've been playing Daily Fantasy that I've done the research, and the research that I saw put me onto someone. But I let a so-called expert or someone else in social media land who had a different take make me see the other side of the coin. 100% of the time, you are going to feel better dying on your hill that you got it wrong, even though you put in the work, you did the research, you saw something that gave you a competitive advantage against everybody else. Then if you listen to someone else and your original take ended up being right, there is nothing more defeating in daily fantasy than having a take and not having the guts to stay behind it. So I'm begging you, if you see something, stick with it. You are going to be happier one way or another. You might be pissed that you lost, but in the long run, more of those takes are going to pay off than not. You have to remember that sports is volatile, but at the end of the day, good information and good research habits are going to yield positive results for you. All right, I'm done standing on my pedestal right now. I feel pretty good about this. I never have any actual notes when I do podcasts, right? I like shooting from the hip, and I think it works out well for me. That's my style. It's my steez. Check us out, Student Body Right, RITE.com, Twitter, Facebook, at Student Body Right. And you can find me on Twitter at Nick from CWE. We'll catch you again tomorrow.